presenting the 8th International Herb Symposium, celebrating the healing power of plants. Sponsored by Herb Farm, Frontier Herbs, Vita, New Chapter, Mountain Rose Herbs, Clayton College of Natural Medicine, and Sage Mountain Herbs. Held June 22nd through 24th, 2007, on the campus of Wheaton College in Norton, Massachusetts. This presentation is titled Nutritive and Tonic Herbs, presented by Susan Weed.
Some of you know already that I am celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Wise Woman Center this year. And, you know, for me, the Wise Woman Center was a dream. But it's the people who've come to the Wise Woman Center over the past 25 years who've made it a reality. So I wanted to spend this year thanking anybody here who has come to the Wise Woman Center for making that reality. And my dear friend, Marie Summerwood, said, well, what you should do as a giveaway to everybody and, you know, just a thank you, is to make a CD of your songs. And so we have made the Wise Woman Center 25th anniversary celebration CD called It's Time. And we've been saying it's the Green Girls. Robin Rose Bennett, who's been here but not teaching, is on it. Gretchen Gould, who's been selling her amazing salves, does really dynamite keyboard on it. Many herbal teachers that you know just came together to sing these wonderful songs. And I invited my friend Lisa T.L. to come out from California and sing. And I want to sing one of her songs. And somebody came up to me this morning and said, somebody told me to go to your class because you always start with a song, which is true. And I was taught this by both of my mentors. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross would not teach anyone until after they had sung. She said, there's too much stuff flying around in their heads, and the singing makes it all go to ground. She said, that opens it up, and then you can actually get something in there. And also my mentor, Jean Houston. When you walk into her classroom, there is music going, and you better dance or sing along if you want to be taught. So I really observed that. I was always the kind of little girl who basically, whenever she sang, was told to shut up. I'm sure many of you here have suffered the same fate. You know, we're just, oh, we're so excited to be alive. And people are going, you don't sing on key. And this was really, really driven home to me when I was asked to be in the high school choir. And then when I got there, they said, we need another tall girl for the back, but we don't want you to sing. Ugh. So, you know, I kind of grew up buttoning it and not singing because I knew everybody hated it when I sang. And they were just, you know, in horrible pain when I sang. Maybe I would sing a little bit for myself out in the woods with the goats, but I certainly wasn't going to harm anybody else with my awful singing. And then Yewinod Tuwels, she whose voice rides the wind, also known by her Scotch-American name of Twyla Nitch, adopted me and initiated me into the Seneca Wolf Clan. I was just thrilled until she told me what the responsibilities of the wolf were. To make the paths to the water, to hold the family unit, and to sing. And I went, oh, no. Why didn't she initiate me into the Turtle Clan? Have to sing. This is pretty daunting. Well, very shortly thereafter, I was up in Canada teaching at a very big conference like this, and there was somebody there who I'd never met before, Ralph Blum, who styles himself the Runatic, and he has written many, many books about the runes, and he started his workshop by playing a song, White Buffalo Woman, I seek your wisdom, and I was thrilled. I said, wow. Went up to him after the class, and I said, that's a great song. Can I hear some of the other songs on that tape? He said, yes, but you have to come to my room. So I went to his room, and I left with the tape. And you know how you do. I put that tape in the tape machine. I drove home. It was hours and hours and hours driving home. So I just played the tape over and over and over again. And then when I got home, I wrote a little letter to the woman who had done it, Lisa Thiel. And I said, wow, this is just a great tape. And that song, that's mine. And she wrote back this rather polite, who the are you? To say that song is your song. And a few years afterwards, we co-taught a women's group in Jamaica. And at the end of that time, she said, you know what? You're right. It is your song. And it's on the CD, but it's not my song. It's our song. And it really has become a bit of a theme song for the herbal community. Many of you know it. Sing along. The spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace. Second verse, same as the first. The spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of the beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace. Third verse, almost the same. Spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the plant says, come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace. And so we flew Lisa Thiel in from California to sing with us, and you get to hear her singing that as well as checking it out on her tapes. About a year ago, I got a very interesting letter. And after I had read this letter, I wrote to the woman and I said, this is an amazing story. I said, can I tell your story? And she wrote back and she said, what do you think I wrote you? Tell everybody. So here's what her letter said. She said, in 1997, when I was 57, my doctor said, we're going to give you a bone scan. Well, the results of the bone scan, she said, were that I had severe osteoporosis. And my doctor said, you need to take this medicine. And I said, I ain't taking any medicine. Now, you've probably heard of many of the bone medicines that are given to people who have osteoporosis, Fosamax being the one that's been around the longest. And you may have even heard people say, if you take Fosamax, you will have your risk of breaking a hip. Now, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I mean, wow. We can take a drug and our risk of breaking a hip will be half of what it ordinarily would be. However, we need to go back and first find out what is our risk. So a white woman's risk of breaking a bone in the United States, a hip over her lifetime, is 2%. So if you take Fosamax, your risk is 1%. That's half, right? Suppose I said to you, take this drug and lower your risk of breaking a hip by 1%. Both are true statements, aren't they? Uh-huh. So we must always be very, very careful when we hear statistics thrown around, because statistics can easily confuse us. At any rate, she refused. She said, I'm not taking any drugs. She says, all right, well, take a calcium supplement. She said, no, I'm not taking calcium supplements. You know, in a study that was done in Australia, and they enrolled, about 30,000 women over the age of 55 and followed them for 6.5 years. they found that women who took calcium supplements were twice as likely to break a bone as women who did not take calcium supplements, irrespective of the amount of calcium in their diets. And that's, of course, because calcium supplements make the bones brittle. So she said, no, I'm not taking any calcium supplement. He said, well, will you exercise? She said, no. He said, what am I going to do with you? She said, you have nothing to do with me. It's me who has to do with me. So 3 years pass, and we're up to the year 2000, and she has now lost 3 inches in height. Where'd it go? What happened? How'd she get shorter? Her spine was having minute little fractures and compressing down. That's what eventually winds you bent over. So her doctor's frantic by now. Will you take this? Will you do this? Will you do the once a year shot? Will you do? No. She says, no, no, no. It's really of absolutely no concern to me that I have osteoporosis. However, she said, what did concern me was I felt tired. I was extremely tired. So I said to my daughter, June, who just graduated from your Live Out apprenticeship program, do you have any herbs? Did you learn about any herbs that could give me energy? Now let's look at this from the viewpoint of the three traditions. If June had just graduated from her medical program, what might she have suggested to her mother for energy? How about caffeine? Caffeine, or I don't know, I don't watch TV much, but sometimes I'm in people's houses. Isn't there like some drug being advertised to give you more energy? Yeah, I kind of caught that out of the corner of my eye at some place. So that would be, you know, it would be a drug or a constituent. Like this, oh, well, caffeine. They would, you know, you can choose coffee or tea or soda pop or, you know, all these new stuff that's like loaded with caffeine. But that's what they would say. And that was just to kind of give energy without building it. Now, suppose that June had been in any one of the wonderful herbal programs that are offered by many of the teachers here, but are heroic in nature. Then she might have been offered supplements or cayenne or guarana, right? Herbs that, again, really are going to give her energy, but actually, to my mind, undercut her actual power. Because when we push energy that way, it doesn't just come from the universe, it's actually coming from us. But we haven't built up to be able to have that much energy. So June, having graduated from my program, from the Wise Woman program, said, stinging nettle. Stinging nettle. It's the energy of the earth, and it builds your energy from the inside out. Because it repairs, nourishes, and rebuilds the kidneys and the adrenals. So June's mom said, hey, that's no problem. Tell me how to do it. June said, well, you need to buy a pound of dried stinging nettle, and you weigh it out, and you weigh 1 ounce, and you put it in a quart jar. Then you fill that jar to the top with boiling water, screw a tight lid on it, and let it sit for at least 4 hours or overnight, whichever works easier for you. I generally make my infusions last thing at night and just let them sit. So June's mom said, I can do that. And then do I just like drink it right out of the jar? June said, well, why don't you strain it first? All right, strain the plant material out and then really squeeze it, get the last of the good out of that plant material. And let me remind you here what one of the Maori elders that I had been privileged to spend time with told me, and that is, don't expect any herb to offer you anything if you throw it in the trash. It's one of those simple statements that like just reverberates through you, right? And you go, oh my goodness. All right. Not everybody has a compost pile, but everybody has some earth you can put that herb back on. I've made infusion in the, you know, 50th floor of a high rise in Manhattan. And after we have that squeeze that plant material. I put it in a baggie. I put it in my pocket. All right? And hey, you know, you're walking around Manhattan, usually, and you walk over to Park Avenue and you empty your baggie. Don't throw the baggie out. Put the empty baggie back in your pocket. Or you may have a walk through Central Park and you find a nice place to put it. You know, I've never been anywhere where there isn't some place that you can safely give your herb back to the earth. So June's mom said, okay, and then I just like, what do I do? Do I drink a little of it? Do I drink a lot of it? Do I have to drink it like just like that? And she said, oh, no, anything goes. Anything goes. You can drink the whole quart in a day. You can drink part of it. But after you strain it, put it in the refrigerator. I think of nettle infusion as the blood of the earth. And I treat it like I would treat any blood product, which means I want to keep it refrigerated and I do not want to hold on to it for very long. Depending on your room temperature when you were infusing it, it could last anywhere from 24 to 48 hours in the refrigerator, but not a long time. And said June, you can drink it right out of the refrigerator. You can pour it over ice. 9 out of 10 menopausal women prefer their nettle infusion over ice. You can heat it up. You can put miso in it. You can use it as a soup stock. You can put honey in it. You can put milk in it. You can put whiskey in it if you want it. All right. So I don't personally recommend it, but hey, everybody has to start their day the way they start their day, right? So she said, anything goes. Just a sideline here. One of my other students thought, oh my goodness, everything that's wrong with my mom can be fixed by nettle. I'm going to get my mom to drink nettle. And what she did was she bought the quart jar. She measured out the nettle. She put it in the jar and she mailed that to her mom. So just to add boiling water. Right, making it as easy, she thought, as possible. Her mom calls her up and says, you expect me to drink that swamp water? That stuff tastes like it's from a bog. So, oh, she was so despondent. And I said, well, let's think about this. What does your mother like to drink? Because you can add anything else to this. Add cranberry juice to it, add tomato juice to it. Yeah, anything is fine. She said, well, there isn't anything my mother likes to drink because she drinks a lot of different things. But everything she drinks has ice in it. I said, great, call her up. Tell her to take your nettle infusion and freeze it in an ice cube tray. And every time she has a drink, put a nettle ice cube in it. And their mother was happy to do that and was able to consume the entire quart of nettle in 2 days by just putting it as ice. So again, don't limit yourself here. Really be willing to expand out. Belinda really wanted Larry to drink oat straw because their times in bed were kind of boring. And Larry was having none of drinking any herb at all. So one morning, Larry says to Belinda, honey, my coffee tastes funny. And she says, well, you know, darling, it's great, you know, roasting and grinding our own coffee. She said, but I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm too busy. You get instant from now on. Yes, you just heat up a cup of oat straw infusion, put in a couple of spoons of instant coffee. See, she said, boy, and within 7 days, things were rocking in bed, and Larry was used to the taste of his coffee. So be imaginative in doing this. Well, June's mom was just thrilled about this. She and June went out, and they bought the herbs and talked about all the wonderful places to get bulk herbs. And Frontier, who you've heard a lot about, this weekend's a wonderful place for bulk herbs. Mountain Rose, who again, both of these are sponsors here. Wonderful place for bulk herbs. And a small little business run by two past apprentices of mine, Red Moon Herbs, also sells a bulk herbs. If you don't want to remember any of that, you want to come to my website, which is susanweed.com. There's a section on infusions and links to those places to help you get there and buy your herb for infusion. Well, June's mom was all set up. She started making her nettle infusion, drinking her nettle infusion, you know, doing 3-4 quarts a week. And within a couple of weeks, she called June and she said, click my heels, she said. I have so much energy. This is great. She said, I never thought I could feel this fantastic. She said, there aren't any other infusions I could drink, are there? And Jean said, yes, there's oat straw, and there's red clover, and there's comfrey leaf. And June's mom said, I don't know about that comfrey stuff. I've heard some weird things about the comfrey, but red clover and oat straw, those sound really good to me. So in her letter, she said that what she began to do was on Sunday night, she'd make a quart of nettle and a quart of oat straw. And she'd drink those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and either Wednesday night or Thursday night, she'd make a quart of nettle and a quart of red clover. So basically, in a week, she was drinking 2 quarts of nettle, a quart of oat straw, and a quart of red clover. By the year 2002, so she's been doing this for approximately 2 years, she is at her doctor's, and her doctor says to her, well, this is quite interesting. Your most recent bone scan shows that your osteoporosis is starting to reverse. He says, I'm so glad to see that you've been exercising. She says, I'm not exercising. He says, so you're taking a calcium supplement, right? She said, no. He said, you're going to another doctor and getting drugs? She said, no. He says, well, it's odd. Osteoporosis usually gets worse. It doesn't reverse. She said, well, I don't know. What's happening? 2 more years passed. And we're now up to 2004, and she's now 64 years old. And she's at the doctor's, and the doctor said, well, you know, your most recent bone scan, you don't have osteoporosis. You don't even have osteopenia. You actually have the bone mass of a 40-year-old woman. He said, you sure you're not taking drugs? She said, no. Or supplements? She said, no. He says, but you are exercising. She said, no. He says, well, what's causing this? She says, I have no idea. And she really didn't. Because why was she drinking the infusions? For energy. She was totally unconcerned about her bones. This was not on the screen, didn't exist, didn't need to be treated. She just wanted energy. And suddenly, her doctor is saying, what happened to your osteoporosis? Last fall, I was very privileged to spend a week with Michael Moore down at Tysophia, not the filmmaker, the herbalist, right? And Michael started the class not looking quite directly at me by saying, let's be clear. If an herb can't kill you, it can't make medicine. Certainly not my take on herbal medicine, huh? As a matter of fact, one of the things I'm inordinately proud of is in the first edition of Vero Tyler's Honest Herbal. Ooh, what a title. He says, I wasn't going to include chickweed, but unscrupulous herbalists are telling you it's medicinal. He says, I can prove it's not medicinal. It never killed anyone. Well, that is the definition of medicine. In order to put a drug on the market, we must establish an LD50, yes? What's an LD50? Lethal dose for 50% of the animals it's given to. If you cannot establish an LD50, you can't sell your drug. Can I establish an LD50 for chickweed? I do not think there is any quantity of chickweed that could kill an animal. What about stinging nettle? Can we establish an LD50 for it? No. So every time we would go past stinging nettle, and we were together, as I said, for many, many days, one or more of us would say, hey, Michael, talk about nettle. And he'd say, useless plant. I mean, this went on almost every day. We'd say, hey, Michael, talk about nettle. Useless plant. And so finally, on the last day, you know, we all got together and we went, talk about nettle. This is huge. We were at James Duke's beautiful garden. There's this big patch of nettle, and we're like, okay, talk about it already. So, yeah, well, I don't know, you know, like I was passing kidney stones and one of them got stuck in my ureter and it backed up into my kidneys and it destroyed my kidney function. And the medical professionals told me I had, you know, a few months and if I wanted to mess around with herbs and see if I could restore kidney function, I could. He says, boy, I've heard, you know, that nettle can restore kidney function. Well, I took nettle root and it did nothing. I took nettle seed and it did nothing. So as far as I'm concerned, nettle can't restore kidney function. I'm trying to be a good student and not scream at this point. All right, and we said, what about the leaves, Michael? He said, oh, well, you know, they've got lots of minerals and vitamins and stuff in there. He said, but I can, you know, I can tell you something fairly interesting about that. He said, the valence of the minerals in the nettle is the opposite of the valence of the blood. So what does that mean? Right. A valence is a charge, right? So the minerals in nettle, let us say, I don't know if this is right, but I can only be half wrong here, right? Let's say that the minerals in nettle have a positive charge or a positive valence, and the blood itself has a negative valence or a negative charge. What happens? And what happens is that the minerals in nettle go into the blood without any need of your digestive system. They are literally sucked into your blood like a magnet was pulling them in. And this is one of the reasons why anyone, no matter what their state of health, benefits by drinking stinging nettle infusion. Now, let's be very clear, an infusion, although if you look in the dictionary, it says infusion tea. But no, I use infusion to mean something quite different. And I learned this from Juliet de Berkeley Levy, who calls this way of working with herbs standard brew. And I will admit, I thought standard brew was clunky. Hey, let's make a standard brew. And besides which, it sounds kind of standard. No, it's not really standard. So I decided I would just take this word infusion and I would make a distinction between infusion and tea. So a tea is a small amount of fresh or dried herb which may contain poisons brewed for a short amount of time. Like chamomile tea, huh? I was picking chamomile in Holland. A woman came over to me and she said, do you know that our wild chamomile contains so much azulene, which is the volatile oil in chamomile, that if you brew that for more than 2 minutes, you'll wind up in the hospital? Have you ever made a pot of chamomile tea and somehow let it sit overnight? And noticed that there was a film of oil on the top of it? That's the azulene. And if you tried to drink it, you probably went... because it is poisonous at that point. So we can use herbs that contain volatile oils, which are poisons to the kidneys and the liver, right? But we make teas of them, so we don't get very much of it. Because a tea is brewed for a short time, small amount of herb, brewed for a short time. And many of the plants that contain these volatile oils, we want to use fresh. We want to use fresh chamomile or fresh lemon balm or fresh thyme because, that volatile oil just instantly goes into the water. And how lovely. And those volatile oils being poisons, of course, can have very dramatic physiological effects on the body. An infusion is a large amount of dried herb, never fresh, that does not contain poisons, brewed for a long time. So since we're talking about nettle, let's see what it would be like if we made nettle tea. All right, we'd take maybe a nettle tea bag. How much nettle leaf is in the tea bag? About a teaspoonful. An entire box of nettle tea bags is usually about 1 ounce. All right, so it's a tiny amount of that. There's usually 30 or 40 tea bags in a box. All right, so basically we have a gram of herb, and we're going to pour some boiling water over that, and we're going to brew a tea. How long are we going to let it sit? 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes at the outside. Well, minerals tough constituents, huh? Minerals do not move around much, do they? Minerals are rocks. The rocks where you live, do they move on their own? No, except by the action of rain, which slowly dissolves them. In fact, it takes for minerals to come from any plant into water generally takes about 4 hours. So when we're making our nettle tea, we will get approximately 5 milligrams of calcium in that cup of nettle tea. Now let's take our ounce of nettle and brew it up into our close to a quart of infusion. There won't be quite a quart of liquid because it will have absorbed some and there's not quite room in that jar for a whole quart. But basically that quart of nettle infusion will contain between 1,000 and 1,200 milligrams of calcium. So a cup will have between 250 and 300 milligrams of calcium. Is there a difference? Yeah. June's mom would not have reversed her osteoporosis with nettle tea, would she? No. The one thing that I find that most people stick at is putting in enough herb. Get a scale. Weigh it out. Put in a whole ounce. If I said to you, gosh, I've been reading about antioxidants and carrots are a really good source of them, and so I've decided to increase the amount of carrots in my diet and I am going to eat 1/2 teaspoon of carrots every day. Why are you laughing at me? For good reason, huh? Because 1/2 teaspoon of carrots is not enough. Even 1 teaspoon of carrots wouldn't be enough, right? So 1 teaspoon of nettle isn't going to be enough either. 1 teaspoon of a poisonous herb is plenty. But these are non-poisonous herbs. And nutrition is limited by quantity. The less of something we have, the less nutrition we get. The more of something we have, the more nutrition we are going to get. Well, nettle obviously does not just have calcium because calcium alone makes bones brittle. Think about chalk. What is that? Calcium carbonate. The most common calcium supplement, calcium carbonate. How strong is a piece of chalk? When you take calcium supplements, you make your bones as strong as chalk. Well, that's because bones are not just made of calcium, are they? They're made of things like, right? And this is the amount of these things in 100 grams of nettle, which is just over 3 ounces, about 3.5 ounces. Three ounces not only contain at least 3,000 milligrams of calcium, they also contain 900 milligrams of magnesium, 4 milligrams of chromium, 13 of cobalt, 42 of iron, 450 of phosphorus, 1,800 of potassium, 5 of zinc, niacin protein, 8 of manganese, 2 of selenium, which is a lot of selenium. It's a little number, but we need very little selenium. 10 milligrams of silicon, 3 milligrams of tin. And in addition, stinging nettle contains the entire B complex of vitamins, especially thiamine, riboflavin, and folic acid. In terms of carotenes, the vitamin A equivalent is 16,000 international units of vitamin A. Are you aware that women who take vitamin A supplements are 47% more likely to break a hip? All right. Also contains vitamin C, about 83 milligrams. Is that a little or a lot? A lot. What is the daily recommended amount of vitamin C? 60. People who take 300 milligrams of ascorbic acid, the vitamin C supplement, a day will double their lifetime risk of adult onset diabetes. Right? Many people think that supplements are somehow safe, benign, or even EGAD, healthy? Nothing could be further from the truth. Supplements are horribly injurious to our health. All right. Nettle also contains vitamin D. Staggering. And it is one of the best sources of vitamin K. And of course, vitamin K and vitamin D are critical to bone health. As a matter of fact, they're starting to think that vitamin D and vitamin K probably are far more important than calcium. In addition, stinging nettle is over 10% protein. One of the first things that most people see when they start drinking stinging nettle infusion is their hair changes and gets thicker and more lustrous. They also notice that their skin changes and their skin becomes more flexible and there's more of a glow from underneath the skin. Several years ago, I had an apprentice who was a midwife from Germany. And when she arrived, there was not a single piece of skin on her face that was not covered by a blemish. Most of them, pimples. It was a difficult sight to look at because you knew that it had to hurt. Not because you were going, oh, she's ugly, but because you were going, ah, you'd hate to be behind there. We did nothing particular about her face. She simply, as all apprentices do, drank a quart of nourishing herbal infusion a day, and the apprentices are told, until you have consumed your quart of infusion, you're not even allowed to have so much as a sip of water. Right? So your infusion is what you drink. And they soon learn to love it, and many of them drink even more than a quart a day, no problem at all. By the time she left her apprenticeship, and she stayed with me for 13 weeks, she had one pimple, and the rest of her skin was beautiful and glowing. I put that down a lot to nettle. Of course, there are many other factors. She was eating a non-inflammatory diet that contained no pepper of any kind. She was outside a lot more, and she was also nourished and supported in her own being, which is also tremendously helpful for all of us. So what is it that stinging nettle can't do? Well, not too much. Many years ago, I taught at a workshop center that I've taught at many, many times in Germany. Their name translates as the Middle Way. And because I had taught there so frequently, I had made really good friends with the chef there. And so I called him beforehand and I said, you know, my students in Germany always like to take a tea break. He said, so we're not going to serve them tea or coffee at the tea break. We're going to serve them infusion. He said, oh, there will be a riot. Okay, you take care of the infusion, I'll take care of the riot. So he was actually able to buy stinging nettle in bulk in Germany. He was able to buy oat straw in bulk in Germany. He was able to buy red clover in bulk in Germany. The only one he couldn't get was comfrey leaf. And we were making, you know, there were 30 people in class. All right, so we were making 30 liters of infusion, this big pan, right? He had to put it on hours before he wanted to make it to get the water hot enough to boil, even on his big industrial stove. And there were minor riots, especially because I didn't teach them anything about infusions. So what's this stuff? I said, oh, it's some herbs. What herbs? What herbs? Just drink it. What? Just drink it. We'll talk about it later. We were together for 3 weeks. And every day, we would sit in circle as part of our class, and we would pass the talking stick and listen to what each person had to say. And after about 10 days, we started hearing things in talking stick like, you know, it's really, really odd. This morning when I was brushing my teeth, and I spit the toothpaste out, and I said, oh my goodness, there's no blood in it. I said, I'm so used to having, you know, a little blood in that spit from my bleeding gums. And I can't quite figure out what it is that my gums aren't bleeding. And then somebody else was saying, Oh, well, you know, it's really interesting that you bring that up, because I haven't noticed that, but I've been so regular since I'm here. I'm like, you know, at home it's like, maybe I do, maybe I don't. But man, like clockwork. And I occasionally get the apprentice who goes, oh, I'm constipated. I said, talk to me in a week. All right, and a week later she says, what was that word I used? Constipated? I said, yeah, no way you're going to be that. And people were talking about, oh, you know, used to be I had such a hard time digesting food. And I had to be really careful about what I ate. But the food here is so good, and I'm just having no problem digesting anything. All right, and so finally, after 2 weeks, I said, infusions. You're drinking these nourishing herbal infusions. And you know that my idea is that we are intended to be whole and healthy. That we are designed to be whole and healthy. And that what interferes with that is we don't have the raw materials to be whole and healthy. And those of you who take supplements usually are taking those because you feel that you can't get those raw materials from your food. But I would ask you, how it is you come to think that? And of course, how it is you come to think that, the answer to that is that you are told that the soils are depleted and there's no nutrition in your food because of the pharmaceutical agriculture. Who do you suppose makes the supplements you're taking? Not the person whose name is on the bottle. That's the formulator. The people who make the supplements are the same people who make the herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers. So isn't this convenient for them? They not only get to sell the farmers chemicals, they then get to turn around and sell you billions of dollars worth of supplements because they've sold the farmers chemicals. Now that's a win-win situation for them. They get to fill both pockets. But it is a lose situation for you, because you're being somehow convinced that your food doesn't have nutrition. And you know, that kind of subtle paranoia really interferes with health. So let me tell you that while it is true that some nutrients in some foods have decreased over the past 50 years, other nutrients in other foods have increased, some by as much as 400%. In the past 50 years, because we are hybridizing plants to cause them to be more nutritious. This is one of the reasons why we hybridize plants, to give resistance to diseases, to give resistance to insects, to extend the range in which the plant will grow, and to make the plants more nutritious. So I hope that you can carry away from here a greater sense of faith and trust in all the food that you eat, so long as it is not enriched. What a word. One of my teachers said to me, give me a dollar. Give you a dollar? Oh, besides all the other money I'm giving you? Yeah, give me a dollar. Said, okay. Gave her a dollar. She reached in her pocket. She gave me a nickel. She said, you're enriched. I said, wait a second. I'm not enriched. You got a dollar. I got a nickel. She said, that's what they do to wheat. They take 100 nutrients out. They put 5 back. Today she would have to give me 6 cents, right? Because there's now folic acid put in there too. So out of the 100 nutrients in wheat, which are primarily in the germ and the bran, right? All of those get taken away, and 6 get put back. So if you're eating enriched flour products, then you are not really enriching yourself. And I can only tell you for myself, this is not scientific at all, but when I eat enriched flour products, which contain synthetic B vitamins, what I feel in my own body is that the little clutch of bacteria down here where the ileum and the cecum meet, and there's a little, you know, the variform appendix is there, and then there's a little pocket, and there's a really nice group of bacteria there that take the indigestible parts of the food and turn them into B vitamins. And when I eat an enriched flour product, it feels in my body like those bacteria are being killed. And it takes 2 or 3 days for them to build up again and be able to start manufacturing B vitamins for me. There are at least 17 B vitamins, of which 6 are put in the enriched product. If I could keep on making my own B vitamins, that wouldn't be so damaging. But my experience is I'm not able to. So what happens is that enriched product actually deprives me of the B vitamins that I need. Stinging nettle, loaded with all of the B vitamins. Many people are a little afraid to stop taking their supplements. All right, they're at least mentally dependent on them. You know, your average American right now is spending $100 a month on supplements. You all, who are your unaverage Americans, are spending $250 a month on supplements. How much does a pound of stinging nettle cost? All right? Wholesale organic nettle is running about $12 a pound. So if you used an ounce every single day, you would get 16 days. Let's say you used 2 pounds of nettle a month and you drank nettle every single day. How much would that cost you? $25. $25 to have lots, lots, lots more nutrition and in a form that your body is designed to use. What are you going to do with the other $225? Wow. Wow. You know, just think about this. It's amazing. I have not taken any supplement of any kind for almost 30 years now. Yeah, hey, you know, and I'm not too decrepit. Right? So I can tell you that drinking nourishing herbal infusions works, and it works for everyone, no matter what other problem they are dealing with. They have cancer, drinking infusion will work. They're pregnant, drinking nourishing herbal infusion will work. They're a premature infant, drinking nourishing herbal infusion will work. They're 110 years old, drinking nourishing herbal infusion will work. And I have used it in all of these situations. I have a group of apprentices in Florida, right? The Florida girls got in touch and they said, look, we really want to apprentice with you, but we're not leaving Florida. The rest of the United States is too cold. You have to come here and do our apprenticeship. So I did. I said, you have to get this many people together and then I'll come and do it. And you have to have this and this and this and this. And they fulfilled all of my requirements. And so I said, okay, I'll come and do an apprentice group with you. And we did, you know, a series of long weekends. And then when that was all done and they were graduated, they said, and don't think you get to leave. I said, wait, wait, Florida's way too hot for me. Any temperature over 60, oh, I'm dying. Right? It's a Russian ancestry. Right? In Finland and Lithuania and Switzerland, eh? You know, all my ancestors from cold, mountainous places, Florida, yuck. Right? They said, no, 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 you have to come back every year and do another long weekend with us. Hey, no problem. So what do you suppose they learned as apprentices? They learned to drink their nourishing herbal infusions and not take pills. Health has never come in a pill. Health isn't going to come in a pill. So a couple of years ago, we were having our opening talking stick. Well, hey, you know, a big group of women. We haven't seen each other for a year. The opening talking stick goes on for hours. And we love it because we want every juicy detail from their lives. So the talking stick is going around, and one of the women says to me, she says, Susan, I have quite the story to tell you. Where I work changed their insurer, and so I had to go for a physical. And, of course, you know, they drew blood. Well, afterwards, I get a call from the physician who did the physical, and he was quite upset, and he said, Come in here right away. There's something terribly wrong with you. She said, oh my gosh, I feel so good. What could be wrong with me? He says, you probably have a tumor on your parathyroid. Tumor in my, how can you find that out from the test shoot? He said, well, there's so many minerals in your blood that you must have a tumor on your parathyroid. She said, well, I don't think so. She said, I think it's the nourishing herbal infusions I'm drinking. He says, there's no herb that can give you minerals. Because, of course, herbs are poisons. Right? And you couldn't consume them in enough quantity to get nourishment from them. So she said, oh, no, no, no. He says, you come in here and we have to test you because I don't, you know, it's fear-based medicine. The doctor doesn't want to be sued because she winds up dying from a tumor in her parathyroid that the doctor missed. So she's coerced into going for all these tests, and guess what? There's no tumor on her parathyroid. Of course not. She knew that in the beginning. So we're, you know, time is passing, more women are talking, and the talking stick gets over there, and Katie says, I can't believe you told that story. I just can't believe that. She said, yeah, because the same thing happened to me. You know, place where I work changed their insurer. I had to go for a physical. All right? A few days later, the doctor calls me up. He says, Katie, he says, I got to tell you, when I did your physical, I thought this is the healthiest 50-something woman I've ever seen in my life. He says, and now I got your blood work back. And he said, Katie, I've never seen anything like it. You have more minerals and more antioxidant vitamins in your blood than I would see in a child. He said, this is the healthiest blood I've ever seen in my life. She says, at this point, his voice dropped 2 octaves. And he says, Katie, what brand of supplements do you take? No, how many people do you go to bed with at night? Well, that was a very personal question that you ask. As far as I am concerned, I want to be in love with the herbs. So a woman came to me, and she had been taking a menopause formula in capsules. Don't take herbs in capsules. And it contained stinging nettle, oat straw, Vitex, raspberry leaf, motherwort, wild yam, false unicorn, did I say black cohosh? Oh, I mean, there are 30 different herbs in there. And she said, every time I take this, I get a headache. What's causing the headache? I'm supposed to figure this out? I'm supposed to figure out which of these 30 herbs she's reacting to? I said, why don't you just stop taking capsules and drink some singing nettle infusion? Oh, no, she says, nettle's in there. It could be the one giving me the headache. So basically, she didn't use any of those 30 herbs. So are you, my question then to you, which is actually even a more personal question than how many people you go to bed with, is are you so experienced and have worked so long with these herbs? You asked me the question, right? Right? That you know what each one of them individually does and how they relate to you. Then use them alone. Don't mix them. Because if you have a reaction, you'll know what you're reacting to. Suppose you were the person who got hives from strawberries but had never eaten strawberries before, and somebody served you fruit salad, and you got hives. What fruit would you eat? Nothing that was in that fruit salad, because you wouldn't know it was the strawberries. Yeah. So simply is safe. Simply builds a core of knowledge for you. How come I can stand here and tell you what nettle does? Because I have used nettle by itself over and over and over again. Let me dive a little beneath the surface here. And tell you something that I think is obvious to many of you. I'm more interested in empowering you than in filling your head with herbal knowledge. As far as I'm concerned, the reason for herbal medicine is not to create an echelon of professionals, but to empower all people, because herbal medicine is people's medicine. And the way that I offer you the information is going to empower you or disempower you. Suppose I was standing up here saying, Susan's special nourishing formula number 93 did all these great things. Where's your power now? In my pocket. You have to buy your power from me, right? I'm standing up here talking about stinging nettle. What do you have to do to get access to stinging nettle? Walk outside. I'm not saying you have to find stinging nettle and harvest it, but could you? With extreme ease all over the temperate regions of the earth. When I first went to Holland, you know, I had thought they were calling it the Netherlands. But it's really the Netherlands, isn't it? I mean, they mow their nettle like grass. Right? Their front yards are nettle. Right? There is so everywhere. I've been, you go to Brooklyn, you go in a backyard in Brooklyn, it's stinging nettle. Cities, countries, right? Not in the tropics, right? But everywhere else, nettle grows. So I have hopefully given you a sense of power, right? Do we have to worry about legal mechanisms if we're drinking stinging nettle? No, because if the worst comes to pass, then we have weed and fuck and dumb and all those things at the skit last night, right? Then we can just say, nee, 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 I have nettle in my backyard. And no one is going to stop you from doing that, not even in countries where there are incredibly restrictive laws about weeds and herbal medicine. You can still go out in your backyard and harvest what you want or go into the surrounding countryside. So for me, what is really important is that you understand that this is for you, for your power. When we make formulas, we take away people's power. And it's the basic reason why formulas are made. I truly have never seen a situation in which a formula was better than a single herb. And I know that this might be sending your brains into overdrive here, because it may be that you have spent the entire weekend being taught that you have to carefully combine your herbs. And therefore, you must go to my school to learn how to carefully combine your herbs, or you must buy my product because I have already carefully combined the herbs for you. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I have been following the legal scene in herbs and herbal medicine for basically as long as I've been interested in herbs, which is almost 45 years now. And I did, while I was helping to set up herb departments in health food stores in the Northeast, isn't it amazing? 25 years ago, you couldn't go to a health food store and buy herbs. We just assume now that herbs are in health food stores. Well, all those departments had to be set up. And of course, when I did that, the store owners were very concerned about, are we going to get busted for selling herbs? And I said, no, you're not going to get busted for selling herbs so long as you don't give information about the herbs. And what I have seen over the past 45 years is the only people who are targeted and busted are people who are giving information and selling product. The person with colostrum, if he just sold colostrum, would have been untouched. If he had simply told people about colostrum, he would have been untouched. But what was he doing? Telling people and selling. And that combination is what the FDA busts. And they have been busting people who do that combination for at least 45 years, over and over and over again. When they closed down the first macrobiotic store in New York City, on what basis did they do it? They were selling information. This book says eat brown rice, and they were selling brown rice. I will go even one step further. My opinion, you can agree with me or disagree with me, that's all fine, but in my opinion, it is unethical for anyone who is telling anyone about herbs to sell them. Would you want to go to the doctor and have the doctor tell you you should take a drug and you can buy it from my receptionist? We don't even want the doctors to own stock in the drug companies, do we? Right? So what are we doing? Are we holding ourselves to the same standard that we hold other medical professionals? And if we aren't, then perhaps we should understand why they think we're jive. We need to separate the selling of herbs from the teaching about herbs. And even as far as I'm concerned, working with clients is teaching. We cannot make anyone else healthy. We cannot cure or heal anyone else. They must do it. All we can do is to impart information to them. I hear so many people saying to me, my doctor put me on this drug. And I say, really? Your doctor went to the pharmacy, filled the prescription, and comes to your house twice a day and shoves a pill down your throat? And then that person says, well, no. I said, then where is your personal responsibility here? No one can put you on anything. The doctor wrote your prescription for it, but you filled it and you are taking it. Right? So again, it's about power. It's about power. He was thrilled. He was thrilled. He started making infusions. He said, I want to be this vigorous. I want to be this healthy. I want to feel this good. Most of my apprentices are under 35, or approximately half my age, right? And we always tease them when they arrive that I will not expect them to work as hard as I do until after they've been drinking infusion for 10 days. And then they are suddenly able to. You know, they come, they're like, sleeping, they're tired, they have that slump in the afternoon, and 10 days later they're getting up at 7 o'clock, they're working until 11 o'clock, and the whole way through. Because these infusions don't give you this kind of energy, which is a coffee energy, isn't it? Drink coffee! Have energy! Where's my sugar donut? Oh, get some more energy here. No, when we're drinking these infusions, especially stinging nettle, which is the energy of the earth, our energy is like this for as long as we want it to be. It just keeps going on because, again, you have rebuilt the energy source in your body, the adrenals. Right? And you have cut down on the adrenals making cortisol. Every time your adrenals go, a little flush of cortisol goes out there. And cortisol is a pretty damaging hormone to us. So we calm down cortisol production, strengthen the adrenals. And I've actually had one woman tell me that she was on the kidney transplant list because her kidneys were so damaged. And she remembered me talking about stinging nettle, started drinking a quart of stinging nettle a day, and within 6 weeks, her doctor said to her, I don't know what's happened here, but you don't need a kidney transplant anymore. As a matter of fact, you don't even need dialysis anymore. Yeah. There's a question over here. That would be called a tincture. So let's go out to our stinging nettle patch. Stinging nettle is so easy to find, you can find it in the dark, can't you? Look, there's the nettle. Ah! We're going to go out to our nettle patch, and we're going to cut 4 ounces of fresh stinging nettle, and we're going to hang it up to dry. And when that's dried, how much will it weigh? 1 ounce. 1 ounce. So in our quart infusion, we are getting the equivalent of 4 ounces of fresh stinging nettle. On the same day, we're going to cut another 4 ounces of stinging nettle from the same patch and put that in a quart jar and tincture it. Now, minerals do not dissolve really readily in alcohol. And if you want to test this out, take a glass of water, a glass of vinegar, and a glass of whatever alcohol you use to make your tinctures, and pound a box of cheap salt. And measure into each glass a tablespoon of salt and stir it and keep doing that until the liquid will not take anymore. In other words, liquids become saturated, right? Salt is a mineral. And you will see that the alcohol saturates much faster than the vinegar or the water. However, because this question comes up, we did make a quart of stinging nettle tincture with 100 proof vodka, which to my mind has a little more ability to draw minerals because it's half water and half alcohol. And I am entirely with Cascade, who said the other morning, why would we want to make medicine with alcohol that explodes? All right? I'm not certainly not suggesting that you drink a liter of vodka a day, but for how many days could you exist drinking a liter of vodka a day? Forty or 50 years. This is the ordinary thing in Russia. The vodka means water. Right? And the Russians, most of them drink about a liter of water, vodka, a day. Some drink two. Right? And yes, you can live a long and healthy life drinking that much, so long as you don't drive a car. Right? How long could you live drinking a liter of high-proof alcohol a day? Less than a week.
Is there a way to make a tincture that you would just need to take 9 drops of salt? Like, it might not always be convenient to be able to have...
Well, let's follow this along here, okay? So I'm explaining to you why I'm using vodka and not grain alcohol. Okay? Partly because I feel that vodka does extract more minerals, and partly because I do not like to make medicine from poison. Why choose as my menstruum something that is going to kill people in and of itself? That doesn't make sense to me, except if I want to be a faux pharmacist. Right? So if I want to be a pretend pharmacist, then I am going to approach my herbal medicine making as though I were a pharmacist, and I am going to follow USP standards, and they require grain alcohol. But that's not healthy for us. Just like drugs aren't healthy for us. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, and people have always used alcohol that is brewable at home. All right? 50% alcohol, 50% water. So we made a quart of nettle tincture. How many milligrams of calcium in a quart of nettle infusion? About 1,000. 1,000 milligrams of calcium in a quart of nettle infusion. How many milligrams of calcium in a quart of nettle tincture? About 1,000. So that's how many milligrams of calcium per cup? 4 into 1,000 is 250 milligrams of calcium per cup. Are you going to drink a cup of tincture a day? Probably not, huh? So there's how many ounces in a cup? 8. Let's say it's 240 instead of 250, so the math is easy. How many milligrams of calcium in a 1 ounce bottle of nettle tincture? 8 into 240. 8 into 240 is 30. So there's 30 milligrams of calcium in 1 ounce of nettle tincture. Now, your question was, could you take a dropperful? How much calcium in a dropperful? Figure, just for the ease of math, that there's 30 dropperfuls to a 1 ounce bottle. And you should follow it with half a teaspoon of carrots. You take your nettle with you. You're not taking other dried food. It's the best food you could take with you. It takes 1 dried ounce. 1 dried ounce. If you're hiking for a week, that's 6 or 7 ounces. Compared to the other food you're taking with you that isn't going to even begin to give you this nutrition. As far as I'm concerned, when I'm hiking, and I do a lot of backpacking, I'd prefer to take my infusion. If I have to bring my weight down, I throw the food out and keep the infusion. It's more nourishing than any food you could eat. And I'm always boiling water. I mean, every freeze-dried food requires boiling water. So I'm going to have to boil water one way or the other to get myself fed. So I might as well just, and hey, you don't want to bring a quart jar along? I don't either. I throw the herb right in the pan, put the lid on it, okay? Why should we even make it in a quart jar? Well, I think this is rather interesting. Early on, when I was telling people about infusions, people were asking me a lot of questions that, thank you, you're not asking, such as, what kind of water do I need to use? Can I use water from the tap? Does it have to be distilled water? Should I use rain water? Should it be this spring water or this water? I'm like, water. Use water. All right. Whatever you like. Water, water. And then they were saying, what kind of pan should I boil the water in? Can I boil it in an aluminum pan? Can I boil it in a glass pan? Can I boil it in cast iron? I couldn't believe, you know, that you're worried about these little details. So I said, look, boil the water in anything you want to and brew it in a glass jar. Okay, and then we know it's non-reactive and everything is fine. Well, this same year, apparently people had been bothering Rodale Press, the people who put out organic gardening, with exactly the same level of questions. What kind of water should I water my seedlings with? So they, instead of just saying, did a scientific experiment. And so they took seedlings and different kinds of water, and they watered the seedlings with different kinds of water. Now, when you do a scientific experiment, this is not just, oh, what will happen? You're actually supposed to know the answer to your experiment before you start. Kind of an odd thing about science. So the answer that they were looking for was, it doesn't matter what kind of water, which is basically was my answer to it. It doesn't matter. What water? Water. All right. However, at the end of the experiment, one of those flats of seedlings was twice as big as the others. They said, ooh, 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 do the experiment again. So they did it again. This time, all the seedlings were the same size. So they had a meeting, everybody, because, of course, this was not just one person doing it. There were other people. I said, all right, first experiment, these plants, twice as big. Second experiment, all the same. Somebody did something. Fess up. And somebody said, okay, it was me. I was watering, and I knocked over the container of distilled water. And so, you know how we get. We make a mistake, and we hope that nobody will see it. I try to hide it under the rug. He said, so I just went, and I boiled some water, and I put it in the container and screwed the lid on it, and I figured when it cooled, I would just water the plants with that. It'd be basically the same as distilled water. They said, oh, really? Okay. So they ran the experiment a third time, and this time they used water that they had boiled, put in a container, closed tightly, and they watered the plants with it, and chung! They did indeed grow to be twice as big. And they said, huh? Well, now we think of water as, what, hydrogen and a couple of oxygens. Oh, actually, a couple of hydrogens, H2O, two hydrogens and an oxygen. But in fact, there are many, many gases dissolved in water. And it's not just steam, it's actually gases coming out of there when we boil that water. And apparently those gases in the water interfere slightly with our ability to pick up nutrition from what's dissolved in the water. So when you boil the water, you outgas all of those gases, then you pour it into a container that you can screw a lid on. Now the gases cannot redissolve into the water. And then when you drink it, you maximize your ability to take up that nutrition. All right? So, hey, I already mentioned that when we were making, you know, 30 liters of infusion, we made it in a big pot, right? We didn't have like 30 jars. We just had a huge pot and we dumped the herb in the pot. We had to get up on a stepladder to dump the herb in the pot. And then we put a tight lid on it. Well, we didn't really make that kind of water, did we? Because even with a lid on a pot, that lid's not so tight that gases can't redissolve into the water. So for everyday nourishing, for you're feeling great, but you want to feel even better, you can make it in a pot. I wouldn't make it in a teapot because then you really have a lot of oxygen coming in, but just a regular like saucepan if you want to and put a lid on that. Right, I have six apprentices there. We're making 2 gallons of infusion a night. We're not sitting out 8 jars. We have a pan, and I try to get the pan to be about the same size as what I'm going to make. so that there's the least possible air in there and a good tight-fitting lid. But if you're in a situation where it's really a health challenge, then I do suggest that you use the method of making it in a jar. I especially wanted to talk today about linden. And, of course, there's a beautiful, beautiful linden tree right by the place where we're eating. And if you haven't noticed that, do just take a moment today to acknowledge that linden tree and to sit under it. Linden, linden, heal my heart. You can bring me a brand new start, 'cause I smell fairies at my feet. I'm sitting under a linden tree. Bees buzz and birds tweet. A linden blossoms sure smell sweet. A linden, linden, heal my heart. You can bring me a brand new start. Linden is the world's leading anti-cold and anti-flu herb. Cold and anti-flu. Right? All over the world, more people drink tilia tea to prevent and treat colds and flus than any other herb. Tilia americana, tilia europa, and a bunch of hybrids as well, and they're all linden. Tilia europa is small leaf linden. It is usually planted in malls and cities, because it is incredibly resistant to pollution. All right. American basswood, Tilia americana, is the large leaf linden. And it is the one that you're going to find growing in the forests of the Northeast. Did I give you flowers and leaves? No. What I gave you is just the flower. The leaf is rather... well, we call it heart-shaped, right? Is that the shape of our heart? No, it's the shape of our pelvis. So, pelvis-shaped leaves. And then these propellers are made. And that's what it is. It's literally a propeller. Right? As a child, did you play with maple seeds? Because maple seeds have propellers too, right? And when they fall off the tree, they go whirly, 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 whirly. And if there's a little breeze, that whirly, whirly takes them away from the mother tree where they can go somewhere and grow on their own, because the little maple's under the big maple is not going to go. Same thing with the linden. That green piece is a propeller, so that when it falls off and the whole thing, those flowers, turn into these really pretty heavy little berries or nutlets at the end, and it falls off, and they would just fall right under the linden tree because they're so heavy. But this propeller, which is pretty big, huh, makes it go whirly, 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 and get away from the tree. So that's part of it. I, of course, like everybody, thought, oh, well, it's really nice tea, and I'll use linden tea, you know, when I have a cold or the flu. Tilia, as I said, is what it's most popularly known by. But in herbal books, you will also find it called lime blossom. And in case you have ever read about lime blossom and wondered if they were picking the blossoms from lime trees, the citrus fruit, no. No, tilia, right? Linden is also called lime. And, of course, it's basswood as well, a tremendously powerful cordage material, favorite, favorite cordage material. However, one of my apprentices came up with this song that I sang for you, and I said, what? She said, well, the linden tree said, linden, linden, heal my heart. You can bring me a brand new start. I said, it did? Well, that's not in any of my books. Now, if a plant tells you something and it's not in your books, who's right? The plant is right. The books don't know everything. The plant does. So I said, Several months later, a past apprentice of mine called up. She said, well, I went to the doctor today to have a cholesterol checkup because I'm 50 now, and my grandmother died of a heart attack in her 50s, and my mom had a heart attack in her 50s, and so I thought maybe I should go to the doctor. And my cholesterol is extravagantly high, and my doctor's really worried. What should I do? I said, well, first of all, cholesterol is a myth. And there is no established connection between cholesterol and heart disease at all. But there is a strong connection between inflammation and blood vessel disease and heart attack. So I would like you to go back to your doctor and have your doctor do a test for C-reactive protein. Okay, a couple of weeks later, I get a call from her. She says, well, my C-reactive protein is off the charts. He says, I'm a walking heart attack. He says, any second I could have a heart attack. I said, well, that must be scary. She said, yeah. I mean, we are really can influence people very powerfully by our words, and those are not exactly the best words for keeping people healthy, but they are words of fear. And again, modern medicine is fear-based medicine. We do things because we're afraid, and they do things because they're afraid. Not exactly a way to promote health, either in the healer or the patient. So I said, well, we're going to have to bring your C-reactive protein factor down. Here, we'll leave your cholesterol alone for now, but let's really deal with the C-reactive protein, which is a measure of inflammation in the body and especially the blood vessels. And we talked about a variety of different anti-inflammatories, and she said, I don't know, none of those seem right. She's been, you know, working herbalist for over a decade. I said, well, why don't you dream on it and see what you come up with? And she called me the next day, and she said, wow, that was good advice. She said, all night long, I dreamed about Lyndon. I said, now that's really fascinating, because this apprentice just got this song from the Lyndon that said, it will heal your heart. And I didn't even remember that. So here's how we're going to make a Lyndon infusion. It's a little different from the nettle. These flowers are kind of big and fluffy, aren't they? An ounce of them is too much. So use half an ounce of Lyndon in your quart jar. Or your pan with a quart of water. After it has brewed, we have half an ounce of Lyndon in our jar, we fill it up with boiling water, or we're boiling a quart of water, and we add the half ounce of Lyndon, turn the fire off, put the lid on, screw the lid on the jar, whichever way we're making it. Let that steep for at least 4 hours or overnight, whichever works easier for you. And in the morning, strain it. You won't have to squeeze it very much because, as you could feel, it's kind of stiff stuff. It's not like the nettle that really, like, sops up the moisture. Let's squeeze it a little bit, get that last little bit. Save your plant material. If you made it in a jar, put the plant material back in a pan. If you made it in a pan, put the plant material back in the pan. Take 2 cups of cold water and cover your Lyndon that you've already infused with 2 cups of cold water and bring it up to a boil, turn the fire off, put a tight lid on it, and let that steep for 4 hours. Lyndon contains a mucilage. Did you have mucilage when you were in first grade? Glue, right? I don't know about nowadays, but boy, when I was in first grade, we ate it. Goodness only knows why, but it's good. You know, it was like paste. It was actually kind of food. We ate tempera paint, too. I preferred purple. But anyhow, the mucilage in Lyndon does not dissolve in hot water. However, if you just soak the dried Lyndon in cold water, you can't get the mucilage either because it's all dried up. So first, we're going to make our regular infusion with it. Half an ounce of Lyndon to a quart of water, steep for 4 hours or overnight. Then we're going to put it in cold water and bring that up to a boil, and that is going to draw the mucilage out. And you'll see, when you strain that and you squeeze that, it goes... it's really viscous. Now, some people like to mix the two together and drink it that way. And some people just start drinking the Lyndon and drink however much they drink in the 4 hours it takes the second brew to do, and then they strain that and mix that together. Either way is absolutely fine. So she started working with Lyndon, and she was drinking about a quart of Lyndon a day. And 6 weeks later, she went back to her doctor, who remeasured her C-reactive protein and called her and told her that it was half what it had been before. I know of no drug, no supplement, no other remedy that I have ever heard of that lowers C-reactive protein. We have gone on to use linden in a wide variety of inflamed conditions, and it has become one of my favorite anti-inflammatories because it is so tasty. I smell fairies at my feet. I'm sitting under a linden tree. Bees buzz and birds a tweet. A linden blossoms sure smell sweet. And they not only smell sweet, they taste sweet. My children love to drink linden. I've never had anybody say, this linden tastes like swamp water. Right? Everybody says, linden, this is great. And interestingly enough, your linden infusion will be slightly orange in color. And to me, orange colors indicate activity focused on the immune system. So I'm also suspecting, but do not have any experience at this point, I'm suspecting that drinking linden infusion will also encourage a very strong immune system. Somebody had a hand up. Okay.
You get all the good stuff if you just do it in the hot water and not the cold water.
You don't get any mucilage. The mucilage is what is anti-inflammatory. If it's really gloppy, you might have gotten the mucilage up. It's certainly possible. But try it with the second brew in the cold water and see if it makes it more gloppy. I mean, your original brew will be more viscous than your nettle, for sure. All right. But the amount of mucilage you get out on that second brew is usually really phenomenal. Give it a try. If you don't like it, just go back to it. Of course, this also expands the amount of linden infusion that we get, and it is a more expensive herb. It's running about $16 a pound. Not horribly expensive. Yeah. Now, in general, my rule for harvesting flowers is, are the bees there? I'm going to harvest red clover when? When there's bees on the red clover. I'm going to harvest linden when? Right? I'm going to have to get in line behind three bees. Ewell Gibbons used to say that linden is the tree you find by listening. Now, there are so many fewer honeybees that you have to listen pretty carefully now. But 15 years ago, a linden tree in bloom would literally be a buzz. And you would be able to hear the linden tree even before you smelled it. There would be so many bees working those flowers. A little perhaps more specific, I prefer to start harvesting linden as soon as the first blossoms open. All right, and you may have noticed there's a cluster of blossoms there, and they open day by day by day. So my preference is to go out and get it when the first blossoms are opening and the others are in bud. But if it rains, then I'm not going to harvest something too dry. I like to wait 48 hours after a rain before I harvest an herb for drying. So that might mean it's a little further along in its bloom. As an herbalist, we have to learn to accommodate ourselves to the weather as well as the plants. Huh? And if we make our rules too hard and too fast, well, it's kind of like the year I tried to garden with the moon. Boy, that was a miserable garden. Because I wanted to plant my beans when the moon was, I don't know, waxing or waning in some sign. And every time that was happening, the weather was just impossible. I finally managed to plant my beans, I don't know, like August 15th. Yeah, I was being too hard and fast there, right? I should have said, okay, well, the moon was just waxing or waning or whatever in this sign, and now it has stopped raining and it's not in that sign anymore. Tough, which is how I do my garden now, right? I'm not adverse to doing it, but I am sure not going to let that rule when I'm planting things. So the same thing with harvesting, huh? Well, I think I saw a million other hands, yeah. Linden is not rich in protein. And because it's not rich in protein, it will stay refrigerated for about a week.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any other preparation
dry it.
Just dry it?
Just, yeah, harvest the blossoms and dry them. And then you make the infusion when you want it. Or if you have room in your freezer, I don't, you can make the infusion and freeze it. Right, but I have too much food in my freezer to brew up an herb that I can hold dried. And the linden holds very, very well dried. We have those big, I'm sure you've seen them, they're about this big, and they're Chinese bamboo drying racks. And we just throw a layer about an inch and a half thick of linden blossoms onto that and put it up out of the sunlight. And dries really easily and really quickly as well. The very easy herb to harvest, easy herb to dry, easy herb to keep around. You can easily pick a pound of linden in an hour or so. Yeah, unlike nettle, which you feel like you spent, or red clover. One of my students said, I harvested 2 pounds of red clover dried last year. I said, did you do anything else last year? She said, well, what I did was 25 blossoms a day. I said, smart cookie. 25 blossoms a day, by the end of the year, you got 2 pounds of red clover. Other, were there other question here? Yeah. Could you say it just a little louder?
Can you talk about red clover?
Can I talk about red? Absolutely. Happy to talk about red clover. You know, and comfrey. Well, we'll let David Hoffman talk about comfrey. And basically what I have been saying is, if there's going to be a problem with the liver, wouldn't we guess that Susan Weed, who's drunk a minimum of half a gallon of comfrey leaf infusion for the past 25 years, half a gallon a week for the past 25 years, don't we think we might notice something has happened to my liver? I would guess so. I mean, certainly it's anecdotal, and I'm only one person. But on the other hand, I have taught hundreds of thousands of people who are drinking comfrey leaf infusion, including pregnant women and lactating women, and we've never seen any problem of any kind. And the short answer to your question is, that bag that you buy that says Symphytum officinale is mislabeled. The bag of comfrey that you buy that says Symphytum officinale is mislabeled. It's not Symphytum officinale. Some of you grow comfrey, yes? Okay, here's what Symphytum officinale looks like. It is a plant which, when it blooms, is about this high and has yellow flowers. Is that what you're growing?
No.
And that's not what is in that bag either. You're growing Symphytum uplandica. Blue comfrey, Russian comfrey, which flowers at as high as your garden will let it get. Mine's under an oak tree, so it hardly ever gets past my ear. Right? And it has bluish, purplish flowers, yes? And that's not just Symphytum uplandica, it's Symphytum uplandica X. What does X mean? Hybrid. Hybrid. Do bees come to your comfrey flowers? They sure do. And how many seeds does that comfrey make? None. Does not spread. No, it doesn't. No, birds don't spread it. I'm sorry. I moved into the place where I'm living and started my garden in 1978. That's what, almost 30 years ago. I planted 12 comfrey plants. I have 12 comfrey plants. Comfrey only spreads if you dig up the root. That's exactly what you have done. I actually lied. I have 13 comfrey plants. How come? I let somebody dig up a root. And she dropped a piece of it. A piece of comfrey root as big as your thumbnail will give rise to an entire new plant. You dig around it. You rototill near it. You got comfrey all over the place. You leave it alone, it won't budge. It's a sterile hybrid. It doesn't produce seeds. It cannot spread. It's not like peppermint that spreads out. It's not like a grass or bamboo that has stolons. It stays where it is unless you move it. I had friends who planted 100 comfrey plants along their driveway. They had, maybe the driveway and then 5 feet to their property line and then a farmer's hayfield. Mm-hmm. 1 year he plowed a little close. He now has a 50-acre comfrey field. That's all it took, because the comfrey root is sticky and stuck to his plow blade. All right, and he plowed in a spiral. And he just spread that comfrey root all across that 50 acres. Comfrey was one of the winners in England of the bomb-proof food contest. Sounds like America, not England, right? But during World War II, what were the Germans doing to England? Not just bombing, like train stations, but carpet bombing, which meant they bombed everything. And the goal was to disrupt the food supply so that England would give up. So they set out a challenge for bomb-proof food. Who can come up with bomb-proof food? And there were two winners. One was a group of scientists who went underground, cultivated a tank of yeast, and poured synthetic vitamins and minerals into that tank of yeast. And what do we call that? In America, we call that nutritional yeast, which is one of the most damaging things that you can use for your bones. And in England, we call it Marmite. All right, so that was one of the winners. And the other winner was Henry Doubleday, who said comfrey is a powerhouse of nutrition. And the only problem is it has these pyrrolizidine alkaloids in it. Let's get rid of them. So he searched for other species of comfrey. He hit upon the Symphytum uplandica, the Russian comfrey. He brought it to England, and he began to grow it and cross it with itself, because it did make seeds at that point, and to hybridize it. And I was up at Richter's in Ontario, one of the biggest suppliers of herb plants in the world, several years ago, and they are growing out Symphytum officinale plus three of Henry Doubleday's crosses. And you can see them. And what he did was to totally eliminate the pyrrolizidine alkaloids from the comfrey so that it would be safe to use as food. So that's the short story on comfrey. Red clover. Remember Larry and Belinda and the oat straw? Don't have oat straw one day and red clover the next day and hold me responsible, because red clover is the herb of fertility. Now, I always teach my students, never tell anybody that something's 100% effective. We wouldn't even believe it. Aspirin was 100% effective. What? And I have to break my own rule here, because in my experience, just my experience, red clover has been 100% successful for people who want to get pregnant. Most of them women. And I've worked with women who were told, you can't get pregnant because your tubes are scarred. You can't get pregnant because you're already in menopause and your hormones are wrong. You can't get pregnant because you aren't making good enough eggs. You can't get pregnant because you're too fat. You can't get pregnant because you have diabetes. All right, a whole host of things. Each one of the classes at the Wise Woman Center starts with a talking stick. And, of course, this is also one of the tasks that was given to me with my initiation into the Wolf Clan. And one of these notable talking sticks, the first woman who got the talking stick said, I'm so glad to be here. It's the first thing that I've come to do away from my home since the birth of my daughter 2 years ago. And I wanted to come here to be the first thing, because I had tried for years and years to get pregnant, and I couldn't get pregnant. And I asked Susan what to do, and she said, drink red clover infusion. Well, I drank red clover infusion. Hey, I got pregnant, and my kid's 2 years old, and here I am. Thank you. And I said, thank red clover. Yeah. And the talking stick goes on of four or five people. Another woman looks at her and says, me too. She said, my kid's 3 years old. Kind of first time I've left my kid alone, but not really alone, but, you know, with dad. Kind of alone. And she said, you know, they told me, oh, forget it. You'll never get pregnant. There's this problem and that problem. She said, Susan said red clover. I drank my red clover infusion. Bingo. I got pregnant. Kid's 3 years old. It's great. Talking stick goes a little more, and then a student that one of those perennial, wonderful perennial students, I love them, you know, who keep coming back, and you just really get to be friendly with them, and you get to know them in their life because you keep seeing each other. Wonderful woman named Farah, and she got the talking stick, and then she got this mischievous twinkle in her eye. I thought, uh-oh, what is this woman going to say? And she said, Susan knocked me up too. Farah was diabetic, weighed over 300 pounds, and was told that she was not producing fertile eggs. Hey, three strikes, you're up. Not with red clover. Not with red. Why is red clover grown? To make hay for pregnant and lactating cows. Because it increases the cow's fertility, it strengthens the pregnancy, and it makes the milk more plentiful and richer. What could red clover do for us? It could definitely do that, and that's certainly always the top thing that I think about with red clover, but that is far from everything that red clover does. When I was researching for breast cancer breast health the wise woman way, I found that there is no herb that has a stronger, longer, or more definite reputation for preventing and getting rid of cancer than red clover. And let's think about this for a minute. Many of the cancers that we're primarily concerned with, and there are thousands of kinds of cancers, there's over 100 kinds of breast cancer alone, but many of those cancers are hormonally triggered cancers. We're especially concerned with the kind of exogenous or outside in the environment hormones that are coming into us, both through plastics, right, through essential oils, which are endocrine disruptors and estrogenic triggers in the body, and in the agricultural chemicals and bleaches. I mean, wow, there's a lot of chemicals that turn out to be estrogenic or estrogen-like. So fortunately, our body has a mechanism for dealing with this, because human women make 30 kinds of estrogen. 29 of those are absolutely benign. One of them promotes breast cancer. Doesn't cause it, but promotes it. Right? That one, estradiol, is to breast cancer as kerosene is to fire. Kerosene doesn't cause fire, but if you have a spark, pachoom. Right? And this is the ovarian estrogen. The other estrogens are made in the ovaries and in other sites throughout the body. And estradiol is the only estrogen that we don't make after menopause. We make all 29 other estrogens after menopause because they help protect us against cancer. Tamoxifen is an estrogen. It's used to prevent estrogen-sensitive cancers from growing because estrogens block estrogens. They compete for the same sites. And if you can get a benign estrogen in there before estradiol or any of these other exogenous estrogens, then the estrogen that can cause a problem will not be able to dock into that receptor site. So red clover, needless to say, is loaded with phytoestrogens, the benign estrogens that block the action of all of these chemicals in our environment. Soy is being promoted as a phytoestrogen, but soy has a huge amount of problems, and in terms of plants that have phytoestrogenic activity, soy is in the bottom half. Red clover has 10 times more phytoestrogenic activity than soy does. There was a panel commissioned in Israel by the public health, the body there, to look into soy. They sat for 3 years. They looked at every study ever done on soy. And at the end of that 3 years, they issued their recommendation, which is that no person under the age of 18 should eat soy except fermented soy. And that adults, or people over the age of 18 who ate soy, should understand that it would promote reproductive cancers, promote heart disease, promote osteoporosis, double your lifetime risk of Alzheimer's, and disrupt the functioning of your thyroid. Some of you saw me carefully picking through the food to avoid the tofu last night. All right? Because I'm going to get my phytoestrogens from red clover, and I'm going to leave that white stuff alone. Sally Fallon has done research and found that the equipment used for making tofu in the United States causes aluminum residues in both the soy milk and the tofu, and a glass of soy milk has 1,000 times more aluminum than a glass of milk. And this may be the mechanism for the Alzheimer's. However, we first started noticing this connection with a study in Japan in which we simply followed Japanese people for 30 years and looked at their consumption of tofu and the diseases that they wound up getting. And it was in this study that we found that any Japanese person eating a Japanese diet and not eating American tofu, but Japanese tofu, any Japanese person who ate tofu more than once a week doubled their risk of Alzheimer's. So I don't think it's just the aluminum. I do think that it is basically what we can say, soy is not food. All right. It might be good for industrial applications, but it's not food. And I will tell you that every holistic vet I have ever met has said, without exception, you want a healthy animal, don't feed it anything that contains soy. So red clover are much better than soy herb, our cancer preventative herb, our I'm going to get fertile herb, our I am loaded with protein herb. Nettle's about 10% protein. Red clover can be 15% protein. What's the upper limit of protein in the human diet? It's a trick question. Because there is no upper limit for protein in the human diet. The more protein you get, the healthier you will be, the better you will feel, and the longer you will live. The difficulty with protein is it tends to be pretty expensive. Right? I mean, hey, organic beans now cost more than non-organic chicken. Right? All right? So whatever kind of protein you're getting, it's going to be pretty expensive protein. Infrequently, except for beans, that protein is going to come with a lot of fat associated with it. So if you eat a lot of protein, you're going to be eating a lot of fat, which is going to be difficult. And so one of the real boons of drinking these nourishing herbal infusions is that they are very rich sources of protein, and you get that protein with virtually no calories. A cup of most of these infusions has between 5 and 10 calories. So you're getting a huge amount of protein from the red clover. Oat straw is also, of course, extremely rich in protein, and comfrey is very, very rich in protein. As a matter of fact, comfrey contains a particular amino acid that is used in brain development of the fetus and the growing child. Another vegan child dead. Another vegan mom and dad in jail for the rest of their lives. When are we going to get it that veganism is idiotic? It's not how human beings can live, and especially not children. I have no problem if any adult wants to kill themselves by poor dietary choices. But leave your kids out of this. So comfrey contains a protein critical for brain development in the fetus and the growing child, and in adults is the protein responsible for short-term memory. So remember comfrey. I have not been looking at the time at all. Oh, my. You're going to use the comfrey that is being grown all over the United States. Who grows officinalis? Have you even seen it? Virtually nobody has even seen officinalis. Again, what I'm saying is you're going to buy a bag of comfrey. It's going to say Symphytum officinalis. I'm going to bet my money on the fact that it's Symphytum uplandica, that there is no officinalis for sale. But no, I wouldn't use officinalis because it's loaded with pyrrolizidine alkaloids.
If that's
absolutely, that is what we want. Symphytum uplandica X, crossed by Henry Doubleday. Any of the crosses are absolutely fine. He specifically made them to be free of pyrrolizidine alkaloids. Now, we'll stop in a second. Just as a little underpinning to this, when we formed NEHA, the Northeast Herbalist Association, the comfrey question was up. It's been up for a long time. We took a sample of comfrey from the garden in the east, comfrey from the garden in the west, comfrey from a garden in the Rocky Mountain states. We sent them to a lab to have them tested for pyrrolizidine alkaloids. And one sample had no detectable pyrrolizidine alkaloids. One sample had one part per trillion. And the other sample had less than one part per trillion. So I would say that that laboratory report was that there are no pyrrolizidine alkaloids in the comfrey that we are growing in our gardens. You've been a wonderful class. I wish we had a lot more time. The form of a beautiful dancing green woman. Yeah.
Green blessings from Susan Weed, the voice of the wise woman tradition. Thank you for opening your heart and your mind to the Wise Woman Way. Please visit us at susanweed.com for access to natural and herbal remedies for menopause, childbirth, and women's problems. Free information, classes, workshops near you, correspondence courses, apprenticeships, and lots more offerings for you. And for more great audio CDs, books, and DVDs featuring Susan Weed and other working herbalists, visit herbalmedicinehealing.com.